Our chapter 2 assignment will be due on Friday, so we'll finish chapter 2 today, so you'll have plenty of time to get that assignment finished. Make sure you get a good start on it. Please don't start it on Thursday night. You'll have some difficulties then, so get a start on it today if you haven't yet, and then you should be good. The chapter 3 assignment will be due a week from Friday, so... we're doing microscale density in lab today. Please, when you go into lab today, sit with somebody new. A couple of times through the semester, it's a new partner day, so that mixes us up a little bit. Plus, at the end of the semester, we're doing a 4 or 5 week or so laboratory project that you get to pick whichever partners you like to work with. So it's good that you get a sampling of partners to begin with, so you can figure out who you work well with and who you possibly don't. So. We'll mix you up a little bit today. Don't forget about those D2L discussions. I will enforce those around the time of each exam. So if you haven't gotten your chapter 1 posting done yet, you got a little bit of time yet. But I also will get a little frustrated and will probably change my scheme if I see everybody's posting just the night before the exam or the day before the exam or something like that. So use that to your advantage to communicate with your classmates. Any questions, anybody? Well, we've got just a little bit of chapter 2 to finish up. This relates... to some extent to the discussion that we had at the end of last time with atomic mass. So we'll be dealing with masses here, something that we haven't done yet, masses of atoms and elements and so on. So the mole, if you've taken a chemistry class before, you've heard of the mole, I'm sure. The mole is to a chemist like a dozen is to a baker or a food seller or something like that. The mole is just the unit that a chemist will use to group a large number of atoms together. So just like a pair is 2 objects, a dozen is 12 objects, a mole is 6.022 times 10 to the 23rd objects. So it's a very large number of objects, but normally, those objects that we'll be talking about will be atoms, or molecules, or ions, or formula units, or things like that. Things that are generally very, very small, so we need a large number of those in order to get something that's a reasonable type measurement that we can actually make. So that number, 6.022 times 10 to the 23rd particles per mole, it's called Avogadro's number. Avogadro was an Italian chemist, physicist, chemist, back about 200 years ago. Avogadro himself did not come up with that number. In fact, nobody came even close to getting that number until long after Avogadro had died. But Avogadro came up with the idea that elements, or that compounds, usually gases, is what he was thinking of, that gases can be treated as collections of particles that can somehow be counted. So he was dealing with the ratios of how many gas molecules were in this sample versus how many gas molecules were in that sample. So the number, once scientists got accurate enough equipment to measure it, the first, I think about the closest we got to Avogadro's number early on was 120 years ago or so, something like that. And obviously, you can't go down and count individual atoms. You probably can now with a scanning tunneling microscope or something like that. But there are indirect ways of making that measurement, just like how Millikan measured the charge of an electron without actually seeing one electron. There are indirect ways of measuring it, a couple of which we'll talk about later on in the course. So... Avogadro's number, 6.022 times 10 to the 23rd. That'll always be given to you in a table of constants or something like that on an exam when it's needed. But if you're practicing these kind of problems enough, like you should be, you're going to have 6.022 times 10 to the 23rd tattooed into your brain by the time you've gotten enough practice with it, I think, anyway. So the thing is, these particles are whatever particles are making up the sample that we're talking about. So when I say 1.38 moles of aluminum, that's a grouping that we can use to count aluminum atoms. Well, just like we would say a certain, you know, just like we would say two eggs is 24, or two dozen eggs is 24 eggs, we can say that this number of moles of aluminum, that's how many groupings we have, that should yield a very large number of aluminum atoms using Avogadro's number as a conversion factor. So there are 6.022 times 10 to the 23 what in one mole of aluminum? What are we counting when I have aluminum? Atoms? Yeah, we're counting aluminum atoms. So so let's do some grouping here. One more time, let's do, just like we usually do two groups over here, do three groups over here. So group yourself, maybe group of four there, group of, three, Hudson, Tyler, Megan, right? Andy, Julia, Vanessa, John, right? But then Corey is left out, right? Let's bring, where should Corey go? I don't want to make him work. Vanessa, you're on the end. Why don't you come up and work with this group down in front? Does that work for everyone? So, do these two problems with your group. Set them up like a unit conversion, just like you did on the quiz, where you have a conversion factor. We'll use Avogadro's number as a conversion factor, right? And take the unit that you're starting with and cancel that unit. Remember, now that we're working with chemicals, you should usually have two things behind the number. You should have the unit plus the substance that you're talking about. So 1.38 moles of aluminum, moles Al, for instance. However many atoms of aluminum, and so on. As you're working, one thing you should also do is ask yourself whether this answer should be a very big number or whether this answer should be a very small number in both cases. So, take just a minute, do those two problems, and compare. I'm testing myself on names today, so if I call you something wrong, correct me right away. I think I got everybody, though. When you enter Avogadro's number into your calculator, do 6.022 and then use the EE or the E button with the 23 behind it. That way that power of 10 is automatically always connected with the number in front of it. So if it's on the bottom of the fraction, there's no danger of the number being on the bottom but the power of 10 being multiplied or something like that. It's a good tip to use. All right, let's share. So, let's see here. Let's start over on my right. Okay, let's try names. Stephen, right? Ashley, Nate, right? Okay, hey, give me a nod. All right, yes, your name. Okay, and Corey. Okay, so you four people, you started, I assume, with 1.38 moles of aluminum. Then what did you do? Somebody from you four. We got Ru's number on top. So what unit should I put behind Avogadro's number?
Atoms.
Atoms of what? Yeah, there we go. You can say atoms aluminum or aluminum atoms. That's fine. Okay. That setup works good. Next people, Corey, John, Andy, Julia, right? Is that the same setup you guys did? Okay. What answer did you get?
We got 8.3 times 10 to the 22nd. Or 23rd, sorry.
Just written down what you said. Group in the front, is that the answer that you got?
No, we did 8.31.
You did 8.31. Why did you 8.31? Okay. Alright. So what do you think? What do you guys think back there? You want to stick with your 8.3? You guys want to stick with your 8.31? What do you think? Group in the front. Grigori, Chris, Ryan, Samantha? Right? Did I say Grigori, right? Is that right? Okay. Which one did you do? What answer did you get?
Got
8.31. Got 8.31. Oh. Not looking good for you guys back there. No, it's fine. What do we think? Have we come to a consensus? Group in the back. Amanda, Ashley, Amber. Amanda, Ashley, Amber? Yeah. Okay. What do you think? You got this? 8.3? Oh, okay. 8.31. All right. Let's go by three significant figures. Okay. The Avogadro's number that I have up here has four significant figures, so let's round the answer to three sig figs. You guys okay with that? Yeah. Okay. Let's set the next one up. Same way. 9.23 times 10 to the 25 lead atoms. All right. Let's go back to Amanda, Ashley, and Amber, since all I got was a yes from you last one. How did you set up this fraction? One of you. That works for me. So Avogadro's number always goes with the particles that we're counting, and Avogadro's number is always per one mole, right? Group in front, Grigori, Chris, Samantha, Ryan. What answer did you get for this one?
153
moles. 1.53? Yes. Okay. Any disagreements on my right? All right. I think that works. So that should be fairly simple. I think we should be able to do that just fine. Remembering that those particles are just whatever types of particles it is that's making up our substance, right? We dealt with atomic mass last time. Remember, it's the weighted average of the natural isotopes. So carbon-12, just one pure isotope of carbon-12, has the definition of 12 AMU, but it also has that same number for its molar mass. Carbon-12 is 12 AMU. Carbon-12 is 12 grams per mole. The reason that those numbers can be the same is because Avogadro's number is what it is. The reason, right, that Avogadro's number is that particular value so that AMU can be converted into grams per mole, going from talking about just one atom to talking about a mole of atoms, Right? So that's why Avogadro's number has its specific value. It's how many atoms it takes in order to turn AMUs into grams for a mole, in order to go from just one atom to a whole mole of atoms. Does that make sense? So the AMU, so the atomic mass we have on the periodic table is the molar mass for a natural sample of that element. So that's where the number on the bottom of the periodic table becomes very handy for us. That tells us how many grams there are in one mole of any element on the periodic table. So there's 20.18 underneath neon on the periodic table. If I wanted one mole of neon, I would need 20.18 grams of it. So that works for all of the elements. Avogadro's number is a constant. This number increases because increases as we go along the periodic table because we're dealing with bigger atoms. If I have the same number of larger atoms, that's going to have a larger mass, just like that. So the key thing, really, that we need to know, though, is that this number on the periodic table actually, these ones are on the periodic table. We don't really have any individual isotopes on the periodic table. It's the natural mixtures of isotopes for each element. So that tells us, and that allows us to convert those two units, just like we've been doing all along. There's a reason I'm making you do unit conversions for silly things like, cubic centimeters and gallons and things like that. It's because we use exactly that same process in getting things into and out of moles and grams and so on with that, right? So if I have 12.5 grams of silicon and I want to know how many moles of silicon, what additional information will I need? Yeah, I only need its molar mass in grams per mole. And where does that come from? Periodic table, right? So
I assume there will be at least one person in the groups that has a periodic table to look at.
Do we have one? Yeah, I see a book back there. I see some tables up here. All right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You go back a couple pages. There's one in the notes. Yeah. So work out these two problems right here.
Table in front of you, look over at your neighbor or something. Get the numbers for that. Compare your numbers, make sure there's a consensus within your group. Both of those answers.
All righty. Let's start with, you guys, Corey and John and Andy and Julia. How did you set up the fraction here after 12.5 grams of silicon? Yep. You said 1 mole of silicon? Yep. 28.09, is that what you said? Yep. And what answer did you get? I heard 0.445. What unit? Okay. Any groups get something different from that? Okay. Well, that's what I got, so it's probably right. Doesn't guarantee that it's right. I've seen a whole class plus me make the same mistake on something, but I think we're pretty good on this. In front here, Megan, Vanessa, Hudson, Tyler, what did you do after the 2.6 moles of silver? What's AG? Silver? Yep. Over 1 mole silver. Okay. And what answer did you get? 2? Is that louder?
I said 28.
Said 28 grams. Okay.
Oh, sorry. 280. I'm sorry. I haven't written it down.
Okay. What did your calculator give you? 2, 8, what? 280.4 and so on. So you said 280. Should it be 280 with a decimal point?
No. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 280 with a decimal point is 3 sig figs. That's not right. 280 with no decimal point. We can assume that has 2 sig figs. Yeah, absolutely. If you wanted to be totally clear about it, what would that be in scientific? Yep. Grams of silver. There you go. It's better. There's no alchemy happening here. We haven't converted silver into aluminum. So, all right. Should be pretty straightforward, I think. Anybody have any issues with that? Well, let's use that information to answer this question. I'm not going to give you too much for hints on this one. Work with your groups. Try to get a roadmap. Try to figure out where you want to go, what information you have, what you can do with that, and see what kind of progress you can make with this one. A couple of groups are getting caught up on the centimeters and millimeters. So we have to do something special when you have units raised to a power. What do you have to do? Let me ask me another question. Are there 10 cubic millimeters in 1 cubic centimeter?
Yes.
According to some of your papers, there are. How many cubic millimeters are in 1 cubic centimeter?
draw a little picture for you. This isn't the cube that we're talking about above, but let's say that we have this cube that is 1 centimeter on each of its dimensions, right? So how many millimeters are on each dimension? Yeah, 1 centimeter is 10 millimeters. So, does that whole cube have 10 cubic millimeters? No. There are 10 cubic millimeters just along the bottom, right here. The whole cube is 10 times 10 times 10 cubic millimeters. So, when you take a unit raised to a power, you have to raise not only the unit, but the number. So there are 10 cubed cubic millimeters. In 1 cubic centimeter. Okay? So let's start out with, let's see here, who haven't I started with recently? Let's go down in the front here. Samantha, Ryan, Chris, Grigori. What was the very first thing that you folks did?
Well, we took 2.7 squared and we converted
it.
Oh, and I skipped a step.
Yeah.
Well, first
we
found the volume. Then
yeah, that's better. So, how did you do the volume?
Well, it took 3.51 millimeters cubed, so it did 43.2 millimeters cubed.
Okay, something like that, 43.
We're going to convert the millimeters cubed to centimeters cubed, so we're going to multiply it by 1,000 centimeters cubed.
Well.
No, we're going to multiply that. Great part, sorry. We're going to take that, we're going to multiply by 1 centimeter cubed. Divided by 1,000 millimeters.
There we go. That's one way to start. Okay. Something like that. Did any group start a little bit differently? What did you guys do?
We just said that since there are 10 millimeters centimeters, that the same as 0.351
yeah.
centimeters, and we just cubed that over.
Yeah, so essentially what you did is 3.51 millimeters. Like that.
Yep.
Which you then cubed. And then you'd get to the same point from there. All right. So I think we can all get to that point, but I saw an awful lot of 1 cubic centimeter and 10 cubic millimeters. If you had that on your paper, please make sure that you understand how to properly deal with units that are cubed or squared. Okay? Anybody have questions about that so far? Alrighty. Amanda, Ashley, Amber, what did you do next? Assuming did you get to cubic centimeters somewhere? Okay. What did you do after cubic centimeters?
2.7 grams by 1 cubic centimeter.
Let's do that. As soon as we become specific to an element, right, once we get to the density, it's good to say 2.70 grams of aluminum per 1 cubic centimeter of aluminum, right? That's good so far. Let's stay with you. What do you do next? And how do you know there are 26.98 grams of aluminum in a mole? Yeah, periodic table. And what's that value called? Molar mass. Yep, that's the molar mass of aluminum. Okay. To the side in parentheses. Let's go in front. Megan, Vanessa, Hudson, Tyler. What did you do? Did you get to this point where you're in moles of aluminum?
Yep.
What did you do after that? So, sound canceling units out. There's centimeters cubed, there's grams. There's grams, there's moles, there's aluminum atoms. Is that what I asked for? How many atoms of aluminum? Okay. So, did you get an answer?
2.6.
Anybody get a different answer? We agree on that? Okay.
So, I think you guys are actually doing pretty good with grams and moles and atoms and so on like that. One quick little guideline that I like to write is we can give number of particles, whether those are atoms or moles or molecules or whatever, that can be converted into or from what? If I have a certain number of atoms or a certain number of molecules, what could I convert that into? What's that? Moles of that substance, using what as a conversion factor? Oh, that was number, right? When I have moles, I can convert moles into what? Grams. Mass in grams. Using what as a conversion factor? Molar mass. Right? So, this is something we do early on in this course because several of the chapters that we'll be dealing with will require us to convert grams and moles, and we'll be learning new conversions to add on in all the chapters too, pretty much. When we get to gases, for instance, we'll be able to convert those into different things. When we deal with thermochemistry, we'll go from moles of something to the amount of heat required for a reaction to go, or the amount of heat given off, or something like that. But all of those can be tacked on to a conversion like we see here. So that's a common theme in this course, being able to show that units have canceled out in calculations. Okay, questions? All right. I think that's the end of chapter 2, right? Yep, looks like it. Let's get started on chapter 3. I've had the chapter 3 blank notes up on the webpage for a while, but so if you haven't printed them yet, just make sure you print them before next time so you can follow along with us. So chapter 3, molecules, compounds, chemical equations. We're going to learn about how it is that atoms combine together into molecules, how to classify different substances as being molecular or ionic, how to calculate the chemical formulas based on experimental data that we can get. We'll deal with how to name chemical compounds. So there, we'll go through the specific set of naming rules for chemical compounds and so on. So the difference between compounds and mixtures is chemical bonding. Chemical bonding is what combines elements together to make compounds. When we have mixtures, we have just things that happen to be in the same container, but they're not actually bonded with each other. Okay? Chemical bonding is far more, it's not permanent because in chemical reactions, bonding can change, but if something is not reacting, then chemical bonds are not breaking. So take, for instance, the substances we've got here. Here's a balloon that has some tiny little hydrogen molecules in there. It's got some O2, 4O2. So there's hydrogen and oxygen inside of that balloon. Are the contents of that balloon a compound or a mixture, though? Yeah, they're a mixture. The hydrogen molecules are their own things. The oxygen molecules are their own things. Not connected. Right? Here I have some water, contains the same elements as the contents of that balloon, but now it's made of water. What are these called? Those are molecules. when we have atoms that are grouped together in those specific little bundles, those are water molecules. So based on what we see in this picture here, is this a compound or a mixture? Yeah, this is a compound. If you look very carefully at this, the little hydrogens are actually literally connected to the oxygens. And as long as there's no reactions that are happening, that stays that way. Those hydrogens remain connected to those oxygens. Okay. So let's talk about two types of chemical bonding. There are more, but these are the two main ones. So an ionic bond is an attraction of two oppositely charged ions. So what is what's special about, well, charged ions? I guess it sort of says there. An ion is something with a charge to it. When I say oppositely charged ions, what do I mean? Yeah, plus and minus, positive, negative. Those are the two opposite charge. So any two things with opposite charges will be attracted to each other, just like that. So we did this before in the last chapter. Sodium is a metal. So it's in group one as one valence electron. You remember what sodium, something like sodium would do in order to become an ion? Yeah. Sodium, you're going to lose one electron to make Na plus. There's that electron that was lost. Chlorine, a nonmetal over on the right-hand side of the periodic table. It has, it's in group 7. It's just one to the left of the noble gases. So what will it do? Yeah, it'll gain one electron. And we mentioned earlier on that if I have sodium and if I have chlorine together in the same container, and usually it has to be really hot in order for this to react, but the sodium gives its electron away. Where does the sodium give its electron to if I have these two things? Yeah, to chlorine. If I show it like that, here's sodium's one extra electron that it doesn't really need. Here's chlorine. In its outer shell, there are 7 electrons. That one electron gets transferred right there. One electron transfer. Na plus. Cl minus. Let's show 8 those valence electrons on the outside of it. So by transferring an electron, I made a positive charge out of the one that gave up its electron, made a negative charge for the one that gained an electron, and as a result of that, these two ions will be attracted to each other. I'm going to draw this quite right. That attraction is the ionic bond. So in order for an ionic bond to happen, we need to have a metal and a nonmetal that have made a positive and a negative ion, respectively. Right? Because metals lose electrons, nonmetals gain electrons. Now, covalent bonds are different from ionic bonds. Rather than transferring an electron or electrons, we share a pair of electrons. And that can really only happen, for the most part, between two nonmetals. So when we have two substances that there's not a big enough difference in how much they want their electrons, if they both kind of want electrons, then they're going to share them. There's not the driving force for one to totally give away and the other to accept. So, for instance, if I have two hydrogen atoms, each hydrogen just has a single electron. What will happen is, when they get into a close enough proximity with each other, those two electrons can be shared amongst both of those hydrogen atoms. So
Another way to draw that is an H just with a line connecting to the other H. So remember, not sure if I remember to show you that or not when we had our periodic tables out, but hydrogen up in the upper left corner is totally an oddball compared to all the rest of them over there. Hydrogen is a non-metal. So I don't think we need to talk more about that, but let me bring up my periodic table here and I'll just remind you. Yeah, I guess we didn't have that written up explicitly, but remember, most of the nonmetals, pretty much all of the nonmetals, are over here on the right-hand side of the staircase. But hydrogen is different from all these other ones. These ones were called alkali metals. Hydrogen is a nonmetal. So it has properties that are more similar to things like nitrogen and oxygen and fluorine than it does to lithium and sodium and so on. So hydrogen, when it forms bonds with itself, with other hydrogen atoms, those will be covalent bonds because we're talking about nonmetals that are bonded. Okay? So I think that's about all we need to do for today. Our time is up. Let's have a good little introduction. We'll get into the meat of chapter 3 next time. So come with notes printed out and we'll go from there. See you in lab in 15 minutes or so.